Welcome to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, with your host, Director of the MVAA, Zanetta Adams.
Welcome to the Veterans Perspective. I am your host, Zanetta Adams, Director of the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, and we're again talking about Women's History Month. Today, specifically talking about women's programming and women's health. Joining us today is Carol Borden, Jackie Cashel, and Henrietta Hadley. From different organizations, we'll be hearing about medical service animals, we'll be hearing about equine therapy, and we'll be hearing about women veterans organizations and intimate partner violence. This is a show that you don't want to miss. It's great information, and it's Women's History Month, so why not learn about some of the women's programs that are making historical strides in the state of Michigan to serve our women veterans. So stick around with us. We will definitely be right back on the Veterans Perspective. Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. We are talking about Women's History Month this month. And, you know, I find it, you know, I have the pleasure of being able to share some of the information that you may or may not know. But it's really about the 6888. And if you've never heard of them, I wanted to just give you a short synopsis as relayed by Malcolm Reese, who put together the plot for a documentary. In February 1945, the U.S. Army sent 855 Black women from the Women's Army Corps, WACS is what they called them, to England and France to clear the backlog of mail in the European theater of operations. The 6888th Central Postal Directory Battalion, known as 6888, was the only all-Black female battalion to serve in Europe during World War II. Confronted with racism and sexism for their own leadership and troops, they served with honor and distinction, completing their mission in 6 months. By war's end, the 6888 had cleared over 17 million pieces of backlogged mail, ensuring the troops stayed in touch with their loved ones back home. The last woman returned home in March 1946. They were never fully recognized until yesterday. President Biden signed into law a law awarding Congressional Medal of Honors, Gold Medal of Honors, to the members of the Women's Army Corps 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. And so that is something to celebrate, as we have only one female Medal of Honor recipient, and that's Dr. Mary Walker. And if you know anything about this story, she was awarded it, and then it was taken away, and then it was presented again to her in 1977. But that's it. No other women. And so to be able to see, and unfortunately, many of those individuals have passed away now, but to be able to see this all woman, all African-American battalion of women who really brought back morale, they helped to not only boost morale, but made sure that American troops back home received their letters from overseas. To see them be recognized is huge. So, you know, I want to congratulate them on finally receiving the recognition that was due to them long ago. And for, you know, the president and the senators and House members and the bipartisan support that this bill received in order to make this happen. So March 14th actually was when this occurred, not yesterday, my apologies. So this occurred March 14th, and that's a day to celebrate. So I wanted to share that with you, so that you have, really, we talk about women's history, what ultimate history to be able to see more female Congressional Medal of Honor recipients. And so, you know, as we talk about Women's History Month, and we talk about a lot of different topics, we're going to be talking about, you know, resources out there, and we're going to be talking to a Women Veterans Organization a coordinator today as well. But I wanted to share some things with you that I shared with a group a couple weeks ago at the International Women's Day event. And it was really talking about how do we break the bias. And so break the bias was the mantra for the year. It's for in celebration of International Women's Day. And, you know, in preparation for this, you know, I worked on, you know, creating this, as you will, easy acronym, because, you know, in the military, we love our acronyms. And so I wanted to kind of share some of those tidbits with you and hopefully empower you to be able to have some of these conversations and break the bias wherever you are, whether it be in your work life, in your social life, wherever the case may be. And so, you know, came up with this acronym of TASK. So TASK. And, you know, it stands for telling your story, asking questions, seeking clarity, and doing all of that with kindness. It's so important that we tell our stories. It's so important that when we have some of these moments that challenge us, that we talk about it. We talk about it, obviously, with people that we trust, but we talk about it. I think the other piece of that is we ask questions. And so sometimes that may be sticky, right? You know, you may not want to walk up to someone who is a person of color, a minority, and ask them a question about, you know, why don't you, you know, one of my things that I shared was, I don't put that I'm an organ donor on my driver's license. And so, you know, you might ask the question, why don't you do that? And then I might respond to you and say, well, because I want them to try to save my life. I don't want to die for my organs. And so then you may sit there and say, okay, I'm going to leave it at that question and think, you know, what if you're just a paranoid person? But you can also seek clarity, and that's the S in that task. And so you could ask more questions to find out why. And if you were to ask that question as to why, then I could give you the historical background of, you know, ancestry that talks about how, you know, African-Americans have been used, and, you know, it's easier to let us die for what someone else may need. And so that's this background and this historical background. And so understanding that is important. And then you do it with kindness, right? You ask those questions, you utilize trusted resources to ask these questions. But then also myself, if you were to ask me that question, I should respond in kindness, knowing that you're seeking clarity. So it's a two-way street. And so if you need to know something, don't be afraid to ask, but also if you're the recipient of that question, you shouldn't be afraid to be kind in your response, because that's so important. And that's how we continue to break the bias. So I want to encourage you to look for opportunities where you can take bias to task, right? Where you can tell your story, you can ask questions, you can seek clarity, and you can do all of that with kindness, because that's how we're going to break the gender norms and bias. That's how we're going to break, you know, minority bias and racial bias and all these things that are out there that are embedded in our culture. It's embedded in our thought processes, and sometimes we do it unconsciously, but now we can consciously take it all to task. So I am so excited for the guests that will be joining us today, and we will be talking about women's issues and women's programs and more. So you definitely don't want to miss this show. Stick around. We'll be right back on The Veterans Perspective. Welcome back to The Veterans Perspective. Our next guest is Carol Borden. Mrs. Borden is the founder and CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs and is the daughter of a disabled Korean War veteran and the mother of a disabled Iraqi Afghanistan veteran. Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs is one of the largest service dog organizations in the country. In addition to managing big box stores for several years, she has logged nearly 60 years training dogs to include national competitions, training a dog for a movie, training the number one service dog in the U.S., and the first service dog to ever become the top American dog hero. She is an industry expert teaching service dog law to judicial systems, attorneys, businesses, and has been called on multiple times as an expert consultant for service dog bills in multiple states that have passed into law. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today.
Well, you know, what an impressive resume. And really, first of all, thank you for your service. You know, I believe that spouses and children serve too when they have to travel with that parent. And thank you for, you know, raising a veteran as well. So, you know, I can see that this is passionate for you, what you do, because it's so connected to your history and your family, really. But I'd love to know, what was your inspiration really of working and founding this organization and training your first service dog? Where'd that come from?
Well, I actually had an experience with someone who was not a veteran. It was a young man who had been the football star of his homecoming football game. And in a flash, in an instant, a play went bad and he was left quadriplegic. I didn't meet this young man until he was probably in his mid-30s, and he struggled mightily, needless to say, but he wanted to live independently. And he had heard that I did a lot of work with dog training, so he had this big old German Shepherd that he brought to me and said, could you train her to help me? And so I took on that task, and I, long story short, taught her to do many, many tasks that really changed his life. Previously, it could be raining outside. If he was outside, he couldn't open his door to get in. If he was thirsty, he couldn't open his refrigerator to get water. He couldn't transfer by himself from his wheelchair. He couldn't pick up an item that he dropped on the floor. I taught the dog to do all of those things. She could bring him food and water from the refrigerator, turn on and off lights, pick up dropped items, help him transfer. And it was really a pivotal moment in my life when I saw how they navigated the world together for the first time. She had completed his life in a different way and actually helped him to find a new normal. It also happened to be a period of time when my own son was at war and I needed to stay busy. What I didn't realize is that life had been grooming me for this moment for years. After managing big box stores, I had a lot of, you know, work experience at a high level. I had been training dogs my entire life. And so I loved working with my dogs and I knew they were capable of such great things. And after I worked with this young man, I said, you know, there must be something to this service dog stuff. And so I explored it. I researched it. I found out there really weren't very many service dog organizations and they were producing very few dogs each year, and yet the need was enormous throughout our country for veterans, first responders, and civilians. So I said, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. And everybody said, oh, well, you need to get an attorney and you need an accountant and you need to do all these things in order to apply for your 501c3. I said, no, I'm going to do it myself. And I did. They said, well, it's going to take about a year, but I got my 501c3 letter of determination in 30 days. That was unheard of. And I said, you know what? This must be meant to be. And that was 12 years ago and hundreds of successes later.
Well, what an amazing story. And, you know, a lot of times I hear these stories and they're looking, you know, they start with, you know, working with someone who has been disabled. And then it's like, we have this realization of our veteran community. And I appreciate for you for finding that. And so, so that's great. I will say, you know, I have an animal and a dog really. And, previously my puppy passed away. It's really hard to talk about, but she passed away, a few years ago. She had been with me for probably about 12 years. And the value of having a dog, now she wasn't trained as a service animal, but it's just interesting. When I came back home and was injured, I took her on. I felt like I had this need to have this animal next to me. And I don't even think we were talking about it much back in 2006, right? About service animals. And so, you know, 14 years later, you know, she passes away and I felt the need, you know, a year later, I have another animal that I'm engaging with and really that helps with just my mental health. And so it's really important that people find programs just like yours that are vested and tested and have that background to be able to help with their mental needs. And so, you know, as we're talking about that, I wanted to segue into, you know, how does this work with someone being able to take advantage of the program that you have, because you have so much love and time and support into it. Like, how can someone take advantage of this and why should they?
Well, if you have a permanent disability, you may not even realize that this is something that could help you. An awful lot of people, our disabled veterans, have gone through an enormous amount of drug therapy and regular therapy with their doctors, and it still hasn't been enough. It hasn't been the answer, and that's why we see up to 22 suicides a day, and that's really serious. When people come to us, most of the people who come through our door have had multiple attempts, and we've seen people on as many as 43 different medications. It's crazy to think somebody could take that many pills every day, and they've given up. We are their last hope. We are the light at the end of the tunnel. And so we want to always get the word out. If you have a permanent disability, you've tried things that aren't working, look into the service dog industry. Apply. We even have a recipient relations department that will help you through the application process if you're daunted by filling it out yourself. And we work with all kinds of disabilities. We work, we teach dogs to alert in advance to diabetic changes, to seizures, to PTSD episodes, and of course the full mobility that we were talking about a little while ago, and other things as well. So we teach the dog specific things. We have long conversations with the applicant as to what their needs are, what they'd like to be able to do again. And we interpret whether or not these are things that we can teach the dogs to do to assist them and mitigate the challenges of their disability. All dogs give emotional support, right? But ours take it to a whole new level by actually doing things for the person they can no longer do for themselves. And in many cases, even a caregiver can't do. A caregiver can't tell you in advance that you're going to have a seizure or that your blood sugar is changing levels, but the dog can. So these are critically important things that the dog can do for someone. All you have to do is go to our website or pick up the phone to get an application, start walking through the process. And we do an enormous amount of training for the individual as well as the dog. The dog is fully trained once you're introduced to your dog, but we pay for that individual to come to our campus and spend 10 days with us, learning how to bond and interact with your dog and ask it to do the things that you need it to do. So in that process, we are also integrating people back into public, something that, again, we've seen people with severe issues of disassociation. We've seen people that haven't been out of their own home in 25 years. We've seen people that haven't been out of their own bedroom in 6 months. And the stories just go on and on. But once they get their dog, we start teaching them how to live that new normal with the dog at their side. And it is an incredible transformation. And honestly, it takes place really quickly. I'll never forget a story. I had a young man tell me, and this was sometime after he had been paired. He was actually doing a speaking engagement with me. And he said, you know, I had a plan when I went to be paired with my dog. I said, I don't see how a dog could possibly do anything for me. So I had a plan to end my life while I was there. He said, I had the details worked out. I knew what I was going to do. And then I met this dog. Everything changed. He said, all of a sudden, I started to connect. More importantly, the dog was connecting with me and he wasn't judging me. And he began to help me. And within 24 hours, there was this huge transformation that my own family recognized. And now here we are years later, having this conversation. In fact, his dog is nearing retirement now, and they're still going strong. So that's the kind of impact that these dogs have and why I encourage people to apply for the program.
Well, I appreciate you for joining us today. I'm so sorry that we're out of time, but I will say that if you're interested in finding out more, visit medicalservicedogs.org. And you can find out more information by calling us at 1-800-MISHFIT. That's 1-800-642-4838. Thank you so much. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Veterans Perspective.
Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. Now, your host, Director of the MVAA, Zanetta Adams.
Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. I'm Zanetta Adams, Director of the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, and joining me as our next guest is Jackie Cashel. Jackie is the Executive Director and founder of Peace Ranch in Traverse City, Michigan. Since 2010, Peace Ranch has been a sanctuary for children and adults seeking recovery from abuse, neglect, disease, and war by providing a specialized therapy service employing an evidence-based neurobiological model using an experiential framework with horses in a natural environment. Veterans and their families have been served since 2012 with life-changing results. Jackie is board certified as an equine interaction professional and advanced certified through the Equine Assisted Growth and Learning Association to practice experiential equine assisted and education. She received a master's of letters from Oxford Graduate School in Religion and Society with a concentration in counseling in 1994. She and her husband, Dr. Paul Cashel, have 6 children and 10 grandchildren. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, you know, first off, we have something in common. We both have 6 children. I don't know. Do you have a couple sets of twins in there too, or just 6?
We have 6.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, more power to you. I have an added level of respect for you. So, you know, we're talking about, Peace Ranch and equine therapy. And so I would love to know, why did you start Peace Ranch?
Well, that's a great question. And I get to tell you a little bit about my children. In 1995, my husband and I adopted a sibling group. And they had been victims of severe abuse and neglect. In fact, the youngest at the time had been nearly drowned in her home. And so as the kids got older, both my husband and I have advanced counseling degrees. And, you know, we figured we had what it took, and we had 2 older children. And so we figured we knew how to parent. And as our children began to get older, 7, 8, 9 years old, it just got harder. And we tried to get help for our kids, and there wasn't anything. In fact, at that point, I think our mental health systems were just really, you know, everybody was scratching their head about what to do about this. We didn't know it was trauma, but, you know, what was the problem, right? And so we had a crazy idea. And we sold everything we had, and we moved out of town to the country, and we thought we would start a family farm, and that's maybe something about the rhythm of life. And there's some background to that story for me personally, but that's another story. So we did. We came out here to Hoosier Valley, and we built a family farm, and we got horses. And what we noticed was our children learned things specifically from working with the horses. And I'll call that internal skills. They learned things that should have been imprinted on them in their early years that they never got. And they developed self-management and emotional regulation and a lot of different kinds of internal skills. A lot of it was just controlling their emotions. And so we started wondering, of course, in the community we were in, we knew other families with children who were adopted that were struggling. And I started wondering if there was any kind of model where they were actually using horses like in a mental health model. And there was, it was brand new. And so we decided that we would offer this to our community. And that was the beginning of Peace Ranch.
Wow, what amazing story. And I will say, you know, it takes a lot for a parent group to decide to do everything they need to do to move across, you know, out of your environment to create this environment that's going to be helpful and impactful for your children. So I applaud you for that. And, you know, I've had my opportunity to have some equine therapy over the years, and I will say that it's so beneficial. It's really great bonding with your horses. They sense you, right? They sense where you are, and they react to your energy. And so it helps you to get centered so that your horse is as well. but you know, so you're working with children, and then then one day you decide to start working with veterans or EMTs. Like, how did you get there?
Yeah. So around 2010, I think that was kind of all the rage, you know, working with veterans. And I went back and did some continuing education, and I learned something very important. And that was that working with veterans would be out of my scope. I did not have a military background myself. I wasn't, my father was a veteran, but my parents were divorced when I was young, and I just didn't know anything. I could not be an expert in that area the way I would have needed to be. So we tabled it. And a couple of years later, there was a woman who was attending a class, and then she volunteered at the ranch. And then, you know, she asked to have coffee and she said, Jackie, have you ever thought about working with veterans, doing this work with veterans? And I said, yeah. And then I told her what I told you. And she said, well, I work for the VA. She was a social worker at the VA. And her name is Jan. And she said, what would you think about working together and seeing if we could do a pilot program? And we did that in 2012. And then we started working together, and she's actually our clinical director now. So that's how I started working with veterans.
Wow. Well, you know, it sounds like a great program. And the fact that you have the support of the VA just adds, you know, to that. And so I would ask, you know, for anybody listening that may want to come to Traverse City and be a participant, or they maybe want to support what you're doing, how can they get in touch with you?
They could just come to the website, peaceranchtc.com.
Peace Ranch. And so they can find out how to be a participant as well as how to maybe support what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay, absolutely. So PC Ranch?
No, Peace, P-E-A-C-E, Peace Ranch, TC, like Traverse City.
Gotcha. All right, you guys heard that. We'll make sure that we have that on our Facebook page when we post out more information on the show. And if you don't have that information, you can give us a call at 1-800-MISH-VET as well, and we'll get you connected. You know, before we wrap up, I would just ask, what have you seen as far as what is the biggest takeaway that you've seen from equine therapy in the community that you're serving? The biggest benefit, I guess I would say.
The biggest benefit is that people's lives are completely transformed. You know, working with veterans, we've seen men and women who, you know, just got out within the last 2 to 5 years, but we've seen veterans that got out 40 years ago and struggled with alcoholism and, you know, ruined their relationships, and they got their lives back. They didn't just start to feel better. They actually got their lives back, went on and became a part of their community, started to hold office. We have a guy that actually got on his town council, a Vietnam vet, who got his life back. So it's life transforming.
Well, that's great to hear. And I would tell anyone, you know, I don't know if there may be some people who have fear of horses or any of those other things, but you know, it truly is transforming and life-changing, especially if you're someone who, I was that person who used to be able to ride horses, and then I had my back injury, and I tried it after, you know, I thought I was healed, and it just didn't work out. But then I got to get a different connection with the horses. And so I would encourage anyone to check out peaceranchtc.com, right?
Yes.
.com, and check it out and find out how ways that you can participate and support and go up to beautiful Traverse City. You know, I want to take this moment to thank you so much, Jackie, for all that you do and all that your family has done, and really, you know, providing this outlet for not just your family, but for all of those people that you've served since you began. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. And I just want to clarify, you don't have to like horses or know anything about them to come out to Peace Ranch.
That's good advice. Well, don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. And when we return, we'll be talking with Henrietta Hadley of WINC for All Women Veterans. Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. Joining me today is Henrietta Hadley of WINC for All Women Veterans. Henrietta is a woman's advocate, author, and leadership expert with a heart for serving women veterans and their families. She is committed to assisting women veterans who are suffering from PTSD due to military sexual trauma, intimate partner violence, or domestic violence. Henrietta is currently responsible for coordinating women veterans' annual retreats and empowerment workshops across the state of Michigan. She is also an active member of the Governor's Challenge on Suicide Prevention, and she's partnered with various mental health experts to provide effective mindfulness techniques to women who need to obtain a healthy mental lifestyle. Welcome to the show, Henrietta.
Oh, thank you for having me, Director Adams.
So, you know, we're talking about women's history, but, you know, we're also talking today about women's programs and programs for veterans as we're making sure that women exercise wellness. And so love to know and talk to you more about, you know, WINC's mission and really why you got involved, because, you know, I know that you're not a veteran. I know that you've had some family that are veterans, but, you know, why did you get involved in this mission?
Well, as my bio indicated, I have been working with women for probably the last 25 years. Most of my work initially was done, you know, just as a Girl Scout and a Brownie myself, and being in all of my growing up girl initiatives. And then later became quite interested in helping women through the workforce development work that I was doing and working with the U.S. National Women's Bureau over on the east side of the country in Pennsylvania. And as I was working with the U.S. Department Women's Bureau, there was a really strict focus on women. And at the time, they were spending a lot of attention, and this was probably mid-90s, they were spending a lot of time on women veterans. But at the time, I wasn't quite sure why they were, you know, putting such an emphasis at the federal level on women veterans. And then, of course, I found out later. But primarily working with women from workforce development, post-education, and youth development, I've just had a heart. And when I relocated back to Michigan from Pennsylvania, I was asked to volunteer. And we all love that beautiful word, volunteer, with the WINC organization at one of their signature retreats, which was Camp Courage. And when I was asked to volunteer, I just fell in love, one, with the community of women veterans and how WINC at the time was focusing on revitalizing women and giving women a place to call their own, women veterans, that is. And as you know, the mission of WINC is to really engage women and bring them together so that they have a sisterhood. And so as I started volunteering, I just found my place after relocating back to Michigan, in the sense of here was a group needed to be re-engaged back into the community as now civilians. And why not use my skills and use the experience from working with the U.S. Department of the Women's Bureau and work with women veterans. And so that's really the goal of WINC, is to re-engage and revitalize women veterans and their families, because you got to do it on a holistic approach. And then my interest has been, what a way to share my skills and experiences with a community of women.
Yeah, that's really important. And, you know, I applaud you for the work that you're doing. And I know, you know, listeners, I'm sure you recall that, you know, WINC is an organization that I founded in 2014. And it's one of those things that, you know, I've stepped out of the leadership role because I'm leading the state in this role. But, you know, it's so important that women connect and that they find their sisterhood, because a lot of times we're dealing with things and we think we're the only one. And that's men as well. But we don't communicate the same with men, not necessarily. And so, or share some of those deep, have those deep conversations that we do with women. And so I think it's really important, the work that you're continuing to do. So, you know, one of the things that we don't talk about much on this show, but it's an area that you're well-versed in, is intimate partner violence. And I know the VA has a really robust program now on intimate partner violence in an assistance program. But outside of that, like what message would you say to women out there, women veterans who are struggling with this and maybe don't know where to turn, or maybe don't want to ask for help, because one, they've been trained just like, you know, other members of the military have been trained. So they, in their minds, they may feel that they should be equipped to handle this and they're maybe not doing it well. So what would you say?
Well, there's a couple of things I would say. There has been a lot of legislation that has gone forth in terms of intimate violence partner awareness, and as well as domestic violence awareness. So there's tons of hotlines. There's a lot of social media groups that are available. And granted, you may not want to go there, but if you can't talk to someone in person, sometimes in those evenings or those times of isolation, you might pick up your phone and just say, you know, I'm going to talk to a perfect stranger. Sometimes it starts there. but to really look for the resources that are available. Tons of resources. Now the awareness has really gone beyond when is Domestic Violence Month? I think it's October. So it's gone beyond October Domestic Violence Awareness Month because of the awareness that is in front of us at every angle. But I would also tell them to join a group of some sort so you don't feel so alone. I think that's the biggest part of the issue is that folks think that they're on an island and they're dealing with these issues alone. So if there's women that are out there listening or organizations that are out there listening, do your due diligence and maybe bring in an activity or a speaker or a video or something, a song that could speak to the message. And then the women or the participants, men and women, would start to know that they're not alone and that there are tons of resources that are out there.
Well, I do think it's important too. And I agree with everything that you said. You know, the VA has a website on intimate partner violence and recognizing what that is, because you may be living through things that, just like in the military, you're like, okay, you know, I just suck it up and drive on, and it's not that big of a deal. But you may be dealing with things that are actually intimate partner violence, and you want to reach out and find out, you know, how you can get help for that. I mean, the VA has counseling for couples. They have retreats. You know, they offer connection to retreats. There's retreats out there for couples. And there's also a hotline, 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. Mm-hmm. And that's the National Yes. Domestic Violence hotline. So you can also call to talk to someone there and they can help walk you through that. But you know, I appreciate you raising this awareness on this, because it is an important topic that I don't think we talk about enough. So, mm-hmm. you know, with all of these things here, and we're talking about suicide prevention as part of this, mm-hmm. because that's intersectionality of that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, what else is something that someone can do in a crisis, you know, especially women veterans?
Well, I think, you know, we've set up here at WINC, we've set up a lot of support systems. We have a weekly peer support phone call, conference call. Due to COVID, we couldn't meet in person. So we kind of did an about face and said, you know, how can we engage our women? So we have our weekly peer support that we offer here at WINC. And you can also find that on our WINC website or on our WINC Facebook page, and that's WINCFORFORALL.com. And it's FORFORALL.com. And that's our website. And we have all of our peer support, weekly peer support, every Wednesday at 12 noon for the phone call. And then we do a wind down Wednesday also every evening, every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. And that's a Zoom call. But I am noticing that all of our service providers or all of our, I think Source One has now come out with a weekly women's peer support group. We have our Sisterhood Initiative, which is the social media or the app that's an online app. So there are a lot of resources if women don't want to tap into the VA or they're not connected, that they can be engaged.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You know, we wish I had more time to discuss, but you know, we'd love to have you back at some point. But thank you for all that you're doing and all that you will continue to do. And again, you can find out more information at 1-800-MISHVET. That's 1-800-642-4838. Go to winkforall.com to find out more information. And we hope that you'll join us next week on the Veterans Perspective.